Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Madrid, Spain is home for the band Track Dogs, a band comprised of two Irishmen, one Englishman, and one American. The band got together in 2011 to create their own unique brand of acoustic Americana music, centered around four voices and their instruments, coming together to create dynamic fusion of styles including folk, Latin, Americana, and bluegrass. Robbie Jones, the band member from Ohio, joins me on this edition of Americana Music Profiles to talk about this unique combination of Americana music entertainment. Hi, Robbie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, well, thanks for having me, Greg.
Glad to get a chance to speak with you all the way into Madrid, Spain, although it doesn't sound like you're a Spanish native.
That's right. I'm in a little village called Cercedilla, which starts with a C, up in the mountains of Madrid, like Bob Dylan says in Boots of Spanish Leather.
Yeah, okay.
And but I'm originally from Vermilion, Ohio, up on Lake Erie, about 45-minute drive west of Cleveland.
Okay. And what led you to Spain originally?
Well, my biggest sort of influential teacher was probably my Spanish teacher, and I was also studying music, and I got interested in the Peruvian cajon and then the flamenco cajon, the box drum.
Yeah.
So I came over here and was studying at a flamenco school and never intended to stay, but just I originally told my mom, I don't know if it'll be 6 weeks or 6 months, but then it turned into 6 years and 16 years, and soon it'll be, like, next February I will have passed half my life here.
Wow. Be
23 years.
Wow. Do you get to travel back and forth some? Do you get to come back to the States?
Much less than I would like to, because of the fact of going to Cleveland, it just makes it that much more expensive. If it was, say, a Chicago or New York flight, it would be about only 60% of the price.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I am going back to Vermilion for about 6 weeks this summer.
Okay.
Because it's, I figure, when am I, hopefully won't have such a slow touring summer.
Yeah.
Anytime again soon. So
right,
I'll take advantage of that.
So did you become a full-time musician when you got to Spain? Did you do other things while you're there? What did your life and career musically look like early on once you got there?
Well, when I first got here, I used to take a djembe down into the subway and play in the stations.
Really?
for change, yeah.
Wow.
And I got my first job at a dance class from that. The teacher came by and hired me. And then I met an Irish fella here who lives in the same village I do now, oddly enough. And started playing less and less flamenco and more Irish stuff. And then other Spanish folk music. And one thing led to another. It was the path from the very beginning, but there were a lot of years of teaching English as a foreign language and even editing books for Cambridge University Press and McGraw-Hill. And
wow, cool. Okay. That's neat. Interesting journey. So you are now with a group of guys. You guys call yourself the Track Dogs.
Yep.
But you've been together a while. How did that come about for you guys?
Well, it kind of all happened through an Irish pub, as these things do.
Yeah.
One guy was Dave, our bass player, was the bartender. That same buddy of mine that I mentioned that I've known since then used to go to jam sessions. We played Irish music, and that's how I met the bass player. And then the other two guys worked at an English academy just across the street, and they used to come in there. That was their sort of watering hole. And so that's how they met Dave. And so, you know, as like any good bass player, he was kind of the glue that brought us all together, as well as keeps us together.
Yeah. That's an interesting perspective on bass players. Very true, but I hadn't heard that verbalized before. That's interesting.
Well, I would say he's kind of the steel girder of
uh-huh,
the band.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
You know, and it's funny because none of us in the band is Spanish, and I think that helped with the original chemistry of coming together. We're all expats.
Okay.
The lead singer, guitarist, who also plays a bit of ukulele and piano sometimes, and the bass player, who does the mandolin as well, they're both Irish, and from Dublin and Bray.
Okay.
And the trumpet player is from Sheffield, England.
Wow.
And myself from Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, Vermilion, Ohio.
Did you guys have a... was it an instant thing? Did you come together with a vision of what you wanted to create, or was it a little more organic than that?
Half and half. We came together to do a specific concert. Gareth Wall, our lead singer and the most prolific composer of the four of us, he had previously released albums as his own artist, a solo artist,
mm-hmm.
and usually had a kind of pop band lineup with keyboard and electric guitars and drums and the whole nine yards. And he was asked to do a sort of acoustic lineup, and he got us in on that. And then he got called a second time. They said, the same venue said, "Hey, you know, we like that. Why don't you do that concert again?" So we got together again.
Hmm.
But the very first time that we all were in a room at one time and actually met each other was at our first rehearsal.
Really? Wow.
And I remember that day, Garrett saying, "You know, this is no longer a singer-songwriter with musicians. This feels like a band."
Hmm.
And so from the very first rehearsal, we knew we had something, and it was over the series of the first couple of albums, really, that we kind of honed in on a sound. And because at first the idea was to sort of create a framework, an acoustic framework for Garrett's voice and his songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then each of us started singing a bit more. The trumpet player is quite a singer, and so he was singing a lot of the harmonies, and then. Then one day we were asked to do a cover in a show, and we did The Weight, the band The Weight.
Mm-hmm.
And we each took a chorus, we each took a verse.
Oh, nice.
And sang the, you know, the big harmonies, and then Garrett went, "That's it, all four of us can sing." And
yeah.
From there on, that the four part harmonies became a very central thing to what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Go ahead.
I was going to say, then I started taking up the banjo kind of in a way to get back to my own roots and also to make music a hobby again.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started infusing bluegrassy and country kind of influences, and so that kind of boosted the role of harmonies again.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into, we would do some four-part harmony songs at the end of a show as an encore out in front of the mic, totally unamplified. And then that expanded even more. We started using a single condenser mic for for a part of the show, like maybe 3 or 4 songs.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And doing that. So even though we don't really play bluegrass per se, some of the songs, definitely you can tell they're from that influence, especially the ones that I write. And so that has become a central part of what we do in live shows.
How many albums do you guys have together as a band?
I think this is, I'm not sure if this is the 8th or 9th album.
Okay. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We've recorded over 100 songs together. I think they're like 85, 90 songs easily on Spotify or iTunes.
Yeah. What is prior to the pandemic, what does it look like for you guys to be out and on tour? Is that a full-time thing when you're doing that?
Well, it's a curious question, because it's a very relevant question, because the band hasn't been our full-time work, but it's been our main project for each of us for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And supplemented by other stuff that we do. And so, you know, we would do maybe 30 dates in the summer, maybe 50 to 80 a year, or, you know, maybe closer to 50. I wouldn't, but we weren't doing, you know, I know some bands are out there doing 100 to 200 gigs a year. We've never been that bad, but we've always done, I mean, our longest tour ever was just before the pandemic.
Really?
And we released our, we just got it in under the wire, releasing our last album.
Mm-hmm.
Fire on the Rails, and that was the second half of February.
Wow.
So I mean, we just got that.
Yeah.
Time, and that was a 2-week tour, and for us 10 days 2 weeks has been a long tour. Now we've got some stuff on the card that was supposed to happen in 2020 and 2021 is now pushed back to 2022.
Okay.
And there may be some 38 tours, and that might start to open up a bit, especially as we've been making inroads to the UK over the last
mm-hmm.
3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview. What does it look like in Spain, Europe, to tour? Being from the States, maybe having kind of a recollection of kind of how a band would normally tour here. We've got festivals all over the place, you know, summer, spring, fall. There's just, it's crazy for a band that hits the road like that. How is it similar, or is it in Spain and Europe for a band? Like, because you guys have a similar sound to an Americana fringe grass band. So mm-hmm. I would imagine in the States, under normal circumstances, you would be extremely busy in the spring, summer, and fall. How does that translate into a European experience?
Well, certainly in the UK, there is a circuit of festivals like that, and a very similar thing. Now, generally, they're more broadly referred to as folk festivals, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. There are some specific Americana-based festivals. But the great thing about folk festivals in the UK is that they have a very tolerant definition of folk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because for a lot of people, we might be a little too poppy for folk purists, mm-hmm. or we might be a little too acoustic pop festivals and indie rock
right,
festivals
right,
and stuff
yeah.
like that. So, I mean, in Spain, we are kind of always fell between the cracks because there isn't this. Here, folk is considered to be, you know, bagpipes and tambourine
mm-hmm.
and other forms of Spanish folk. But really, UK has what's taken us to the next level as far as being able to tour and kind of fill out a summer. And Spain has loads of festivals, but indie rock is the name of the game here.
Mm, okay.
Still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, like I say, Ireland, very similar, you know, very similar situation. And kind of the folk genre in Ireland, I think, is more occupied by Irish trad, Irish traditional music.
Okay.
And which is not what we do. You know, some things have an influence, but that's not really, wouldn't be a really good way to define us. Mm-hmm. Whereas a folk festival in the UK might have an Irish trad group playing, mm-hmm. as well as somebody who's doing Bob Dylan type songs,
okay.
or, you know, or singer-songwriter stuff, and maybe a ukulele band. And then there's also going to be folk dancing, and there's also going to be groups that are based on bagpipes and stuff like that.
Oh,
as
wow.
well.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So that really... I mean, there's a BBC presenter retired called Jeff Sargison who said, to me, folk music is something that's available to that's accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, to me, that's what makes you, Crack Dog, a folk band, because it's accessible.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So we kind of slot in sideways in a lot of festivals.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, you guys would fit well in the U.S. as well. There's all kinds of definitions and umbrellas that I could feel the music that you guys create fit under. And you've got...
It's one of my biggest frustrations is that we've never properly toured the U.S.
Yeah.
The visa process is hugely difficult
yeah.
and expensive.
Yeah.
And that's apart from buying flights. And so that has been, you know, we've kind of seen, well, the stuff has been going well and growing well in the UK. We're going to keep fostering that until, you know, we can see that, okay, we've built up enough momentum and following to make the jump.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Well, I hope that works out for you, for sure.
We have been a couple times to the U.S. We've been to South by Southwest
sure.
back in 2013.
Yeah, yeah, good. Okay.
And that was an amazing experience, but I'm not saying, though, that I would necessarily recommend it to a band trying to establish themselves, except for the experience. And
yeah, it's a wonderful event. But it's an event that you have to navigate very specifically if you have certain goals.
Yeah. To me, it has become a giant festival where the musicians pay to perform.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, funnily enough, though, we went to, in 2016 or 17, 16, I think it was, we went to Folk Alliance International.
Sure.
In Kansas City.
Yeah.
And apparently it was started by a fellow that had also started South by Southwest, mm-hmm. wanting to get back to the original virtues
right.
of his idea.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different thing. It's about 3,000 people, you know, 2,700 trying to meet the other 300.
Right. Yeah.
But those are much better odds than South by Southwest.
Oh, yeah. No. You know, I mean,
you're talking about 2,000 bands. In yeah. South by Southwest, let alone people.
Sure, yeah. No, I'm glad you were aware of Folk Alliance, because I would have recommended that to you. I think it's a great experience for bands, especially outside the U.S., trying to establish connections. And especially
I can't
when
recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, for sure. And certainly in the case with you guys and your new record, we want to make sure we bring that into the conversation. That style of music and Folk Alliance is just a perfect fit. I was listening to some of the tracks before we jumped online, and the new single, River of Gold, fascinating song. I loved the, before I even read the description, I enjoy old westerns, John Wayne,
mm-hmm.
and Clint Eastwood kind of style, and I felt like I could visualize a scene from one of those movies before I read that was kind of somebody else's observation of that as well.
Bingo. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
We are definitely suckers for that sort of thing. In fact, one of my first songs for Crack Dog is called Dust Devil, and the video for that, which is on YouTube, is basically a spaghetti western.
Ah, okay. I'll have to go find that. Cool.
With horses and saloon and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Well, that feel definitely emulated through that song. Is that indicative of kind of the style of the rest of that project? Is that what you guys were after? Or is this just one particular song on that album that feels that way?
Well, it's certainly a recurring theme. I wouldn't say that the whole album sounds like that. Some stuff sounds maybe a little more poppy, and then other stuff will be a little bit more folky sounding as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually, you caught me today, working on a demo to send to a guest artist who's going to... I've got a song that I wrote for an exposition in the Thyssen Museum here in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a figure from the Old West called Lola Montez. And she was just this amazing figure who was a showgirl and had her own saloon and her own show and dancers. And but before that, she had this whole prior life. She was Irish born, and she was in London. She was in Paris. She was in India. In Paris, she became a lover to the composer Franz Liszt. And then in Bavaria, she became the lover to King Ludwig the number something or other, and who was the last king, and ended up, she was a large part of why he ended up abdicating and there was a revolution.
Wow.
And she ended up, from there, she went over and did this show and opened a theater or saloon out in California during the gold rush.
Mm-hmm.
And when that dried up, she went to Australia. Then she went back to New York and became, when she was not dancing anymore, she became a speaker evangelizing about women's rights and
wow.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she died by the time she was 39.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So she was born in the County Sligo, and we found there's this singer who I've always been a fan of and has become a friend, and she has given the okay, although she hasn't heard the demo yet. She has said that she is interested, and the singer is called Kathy Jordan. From her most known band is called Dervish, and she's been named as the voice of Ireland. Her own more personal project called The Unwanted explores the link between old American West music and Irish music. And she was born, she lives out in Sligo where Lola Montez was born.
Oh, wow.
And so she's just like, she's the perfect.
Yeah.
And she's just got, her version of Boots of Spanish Leather is my favorite version of that song.
Huh,
and
cool.
you can find that on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Dervish, Boots of Spanish
okay.
Leather.
Wow, that's a cool story.
So I was working on a demo of that too, and it's the chorus is kind of, never gonna forget Donna Lola, never gonna forget Donna Lola. If you don't know Lola Montez, that just means that I ain't done yet. Never gonna forget Donna Lola.
Huh, that's cool.
So,
yeah.
And it would tell her story. So that's, you know, that could go in various ways. It could sound very folky. We might make a little bit piano-y and, you know, kind of honky-tonk sounding in the choruses. This is all the process I'm thinking of today, what's been occurring to me today. So you won't get any fresher news than that.
Yeah, right. Now, that's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. One of the questions I always like to ask is kind of a window into the songwriting process. So that's that was very, very fresh. That was perfect. Exactly what I would have wanted had I asked it. That's good.
Yeah, I'm sitting here with my banjo.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah. Very cool. So the new record is Where To Now, I think you told me, not exactly out yet. You guys are releasing singles, which is, of course, the River of Gold that we were talking about a minute ago is one of those.
Yep.
When will the album be accessible? Obviously, some of the songs are on YouTube. How can folks find you guys, engage with you personally, mm-hmm. some of the music? What's the best way to get in touch for people?
Well, the website is Track Dogs Music altogether. Trackdogsmusic.com, and then we're on Spotify and YouTube and Facebook under Track Dogs, and even Instagram, and it's a simple Google search, and hopefully we're findable now.
Yeah.
But cool. And very, very happy to have folks look us up.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. No, the music's great, and I certainly wish you guys well with it. I hope you get to bring it over here to the States for the folks over here to engage with you guys, and especially this new music. Certainly wish you the best there in Spain and Europe for getting back out and taking it there too.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I've been saying since the beginning of this to say, well, you know, pendulum swings from one way to the other. And whether it's sooner or later, we're bound to have some roaring 2020s.
Yeah.
And you know, this time though, make sure you save your money, because we know what came after the roaring 20s last time.
Right, right. That's right. Well, thank you, Robbie. It's been good talking to you, and I certainly wish you guys the best with your music.
Thank you so much, Greg, for being in touch and for the support.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.